when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
From The Times and The Sunday Times, this is The Story. I'm Manveen Rana. This story is a catalogue of scandal, one of the most shocking that I've ever come across. It's a story about a rogue unit of the SAS, the most elite of British troops, who went on a murdering spree in Afghanistan, killing innocent civilians in cold blood. It's also the story of the cover-up that followed, both within the military and at the heart of government. To understand the extent of the scandal, you really need to go back to the start in 2011. So if you missed the podcast yesterday, do go back and listen to that first. And if you heard it, here's a quick reminder of where we got to. Thousands of top secret documents have come to light because of the independent public inquiry into the SAS murders, which is currently underway at the High Court. For the Sunday Times Insight team, who first broke the story 7 years ago and faced blanket denials, the documents show that they weren't the only ones raising the alarm. One of the most senior officers within the Special Forces, a man we're referring to by his codename N1466, believed that this SAS unit had gone rogue.
We had never appreciated that the soldiers' own commanders believed they had committed war crimes and felt so strongly about it that actually were going to risk their own family's safety to bring it to light.
But the allegations didn't trigger a serious investigation. Instead, the military began a cover-up. The unit, who stood accused of summary executions and killing competitions, was allowed to conduct its own internal inquiry and, funnily enough, found nothing wrong.
When we saw that in the documents, that the man in charge of the Rogue Squadron was the one doing the review. I mean, we had to kind of read it about four times to make sure we hadn't misunderstood.
Vital evidence was buried, and a sheaf of papers with confessions that detailed what really happened during a series of catastrophic night raids, including the cold-blooded murder of innocent civilians, were locked away in a safe, in an office overlooking Poole Harbour. And the man who put them there, Gwyn Jenkins, has just been appointed as the Prime Minister's National Security Advisor.
So the statement detailing the SAS confession was placed in a safe at the SBS headquarters by Jenkins. And it wouldn't see the light of day for another 3 years.
The story today, the SAS murders and the conspiracy to cover them up, part two. None of this would have come to light without the dogged investigations carried out by this daring duo.
I'm Jonathan Calvert. I'm the editor of the Insight team at the Sunday Times.
And I'm George Arbuthnot, and I'm the deputy editor of the Insight team.
Jonathan and George, you're in the middle of telling us this epic story, one of the stories that you have uncovered as the investigative unit at the Sunday Times. We talked about the mounting evidence that was presented to the head of Special Forces at the time. An internal review takes place. It decides there's nothing to see. What happens next?
So early in 2012, there is a change at the top of the Special Forces Directorate, and Mark Carlton Smith takes over as the head of all Special Forces in the UK. But the problem doesn't go away. He takes over in February, and by August, there's another incident. A mother and father are killed while they're sleeping outside in the courtyard of their home, and their two children are shot. Now, the children survived and they were taken to hospital, but they both had gunshot wounds and they lost their parents.
The children were aged only 1 and 3.
Oh, God. So no threat at all to any SAS unit that comes in?
No, and then 2 months later, another SAS unit shot dead 3 children and a young man. Their ages were 12, 14, 16 and 18 as they were drinking tea in the same room. What happened in that case was that the SAS did a raid looking for a suspected insurgent. They were led to a particular building. One of the soldiers burst into a room. The SAS account of it is that they were armed and that they fired first. The SAS soldier, who's obviously highly trained and has lots of weapons, shot all 4 of them. And afterwards, the SAS claimed that actually it wasn't an SAS soldier who did it. They said it was the Afghans, Special Forces. Later, the SAS had to admit that actually it was the SAS soldier and that hadn't been a gun fired. This would later be one of the suspicious incidents in which it was believed that guns might have been dropped at the scene.
So planted on the victims.
Planted on the victims, yeah.
So you've now got 2 big incidents where children end up dead. You've got the SAS already having to backtrack, having said it wasn't one of their soldiers, having to do a U-turn and admit it was. At this point, is there another investigation?
There is, because the last incident with the 4 boys in a room, there was an outcry and it made the news. And the families of the victims were taken on by UK lawyers. And this prompted the Royal Military Police to investigate the killing. But it would prove to be a very difficult investigation because the SAS were not cooperative, to say the least.
Tell me about that. Just how difficult was it to investigate these incidents?
The Royal Military Police tried to get the reconnaissance footage. It had been overwritten, and when they tried to then recover it, there was a hard drive error. And one frustrated investigator commented in an email, "How could so many things go wrong with one aspect?"
We should also add that the newly disclosed diary entries and emails show that in February 2014, the senior investigating officer for the Royal Military Police, Major Morag Shiva, travelled to Afghanistan to interview some of the other Afghan soldiers about the killings. But she was midway through one of these interviews and a senior British Special Forces officer intervened to stop him talking. And that led Shiva's immediate superior to formally record his concerns, again in an email, that we are being obstructed in our investigation. And indeed, weeks later, the locks were actually changed around the perimeter of the SAS's base in Afghanistan, which stopped the Royal Military Police entering.
They're literally being locked out
of
the place they're supposed to be gathering evidence.
Exactly. And Shiva had also been seeking to obtain this machine gun and the AK-47 assault rifle.
The weapons that were photographed on the scene.
Exactly. But the guns ultimately were missing. And she noted in her diary the weapons were not available due to confusion.
That's a very pointed
But a few days later, they'd gone, and she was told that they'd been disposed of for recycling or sold off for parts. And at that point, she wrote, "Unbelievable."
Every bit of that sounds extraordinary. It sounds like the most frustrating process imaginable. Did her investigation get anywhere?
Yeah, I mean, despite those setbacks, the Royal Military Police still felt that there was enough evidence to charge the soldier who did the shooting on 4 counts of murder. They wanted to charge the senior officer who had intervened in the interview and prevented her from interviewing the Afghan witness. And action taken against the SAS commander in charge of the unit the evening that the boys died. The RMP did report this to the Service Prosecution Authority, who would eventually decide not to take the case forward because they felt there wasn't sufficient evidence.
So at this point, we know that the Royal Military Police have conducted an investigation into one incident where 4 young men, children, 3 of them, have been killed. They're not able to see the process through. There are no charges in the end. Nobody is held accountable. At what point do the Royal Military Police become aware that there is a history of incidents like this? At what point are they told about what happened in 2011?
Well, their kind of first window into this comes in October 2014, when a law firm, Lee Day, raised the case of Saifullah Yar and his uncle, Mohammed Bang, who claimed that in February 2011, 4 members of their family had been murdered. And the circumstances of those murders were highly suspicious. Saifullah's father had surrendered, gone outside the house. He'd been taken back into the house. And according to the SAS mission report, while helping with the search with a gun pointed at his back or head or wherever, he had tried to grab a grenade and throw it at the SAS soldier and was therefore shot dead. Similarly, another member of Saifullah's family was again taken back into the house to help the search, and he's said to have grabbed an AK-47 rifle and was shot dead. All of these people had their hands plasticuffed after being taken prisoner, and so then they could not understand how the father had suddenly ended up in his own room,
apparently
slumped across
a bed,
dead, with gunshots to his torso.
When this case comes along and the Royal Military Police start to investigate it, it's brought to them by this law firm. We know how difficult it was for them to get any kind of evidence in the last case that they were investigating. All the shutters seem to come down. No witnesses are available to talk to them. Do they get any further with this?
This is October 2014. They did start to investigate the case at the time, but I think everything completely changed about 3 months later when N1466 contacted the police and said he wished to give evidence.
This is the moment he blows the whistle. What exactly does he tell them?
N1466 met with the Royal Military Police Chief, Brigadier Bill Warren, the most senior member of the Royal Military Police, which shows how seriously they took the fact that they now had one of the most senior figures in the Special Forces coming forward to talk to them about war crimes. And N1466 told him that a cancer had infected the SAS and there were dozens of other murders that they should be investigating. So he was opening up a systemic pattern of war crimes. He alerted the detectives that there was a practice of blooding in new SAS recruits.
What does that mean?
So that's when you order them to shoot prisoners to register their first kill.
Shoot prisoners?
Shoot prisoners dead in cold blood.
People who are shackled, they can't escape.
Yeah.
I mean, that that would be a war crime.
Yeah, and the same practice has actually been uncovered amongst the Australian Special Forces in Afghanistan as well. They've had their own inquiry prior to this. And it seems to be a technique that was used amongst not just the SAS, but other allied special forces as well.
Blood in, Blooding new recruits. In. So this is to give them their first taste of a kill.
The other thing that he alerted them to was a competition between the regiment squadrons over how many people they killed. As we mentioned, the Special Forces Directorate at the time in 2011, they'd expressed concern that there were killing competitions going on. This testimony helped the detectives understand why the SAS unit's claims about the suicidal attacks by the Afghans were so implausible.
We left the episode yesterday knowing that there was also a stash of evidence locked away in a safe. At this point, does that come to light?
So N1466 was one of just six officers with access to the security compartment where the evidence of extrajudicial killings had been stored. And so he was able to point the detectives to the safe in Poole. And they went to the safe in June 2015 and found the confession from the SAS soldier.
Wow. I mean, at this point, they've gone from investigating one incident because a law firm had contacted them to a sense of a huge cultural problem and far more deaths than they're expecting that they should be looking into. What happens to the inquiry at this stage?
Well, at this point, they kind of start looking at 10 night raids, the ones that had been in the review back in 2011. And they completely up their investigation. It now becomes much more serious. The operation is rolled in with a number of other allegations, and it's given an umbrella name of Operation Northmoor. In early 2016, the Royal Military Police identified two suspects that they want to arrest and question. One is the SAS soldier from the unit from 2011 who had given an account to the SBS officer that ended up as a statement that was in the safe. And the other was the commander of the unit that was carrying out all the raids in 2011. That was the high point of their investigation.
Plans were made to arrest those two individuals.
Before we get on to what happens next, around this time, the moment it's become an official operation, presumably at this point, the government knows that all of this is being looked into. How do they respond to the allegations? And how easy is it for the investigation to continue?
So the Ministry of Defence became aware of this, the seriousness of this, in early 2016. And we can see that they were becoming extremely concerned about it because there was an email was sent from the Parliamentary Private Secretary to the Defence Minister, Michael Fallon, to the Prime Minister at that point, David Cameron's office, and copying in the Cabinet Secretary and the Attorney General. And it says, information from highly credible armed forces sources. The RMP are now investigating a number of cases of suspected murder of Afghans by members of UK Special Forces.
Wow. So right at the heart of government, number 10, now know there are allegations of murders.
So they take it right to the top.
Yeah, this rang alarm bells in government. It was precisely at this time that our colleague David Collins spoke to a Whitehall source who tipped him off that the Royal Military Police was investigating, quotes, credible and extremely serious accusations of war crimes by the SAS. The source said there had been a series of meetings at a very senior level across Whitehall about how to handle the potential fallout of these allegations being made about high-profile units such as the SAS. There is frustration within the Ministry of Defence. The SAS has been less than transparent about some of its conduct in Afghanistan and a feeling that they regard themselves as being above the law. Northmoor is seen as a potential disaster for government, so the military is trying to keep it under control by reducing the scale of the investigation.
And for the people who are conducting the investigation, are they feeling free to do what they want to at this stage?
So in 2017, we actually spoke to a senior detective from the Royal Military Police who said that the government was now wanting the inquiry to just go away and to avoid any of the detail of the accusations getting into the press, and thereby undermining, in their view, national security, public trust, and work with allies. And we can now see that from the documents that have now been disclosed, the inquiry's lead detective was complaining a few months after Downing Street had been alerted that his team were under political pressure to focus its investigation on junior SAS soldiers rather than their commanders.
Wow, nobody wants this to go up the chain.
Exactly.
The Royal Military Police are busy investigating what's happened. They've got two suspects. They are feeling political pressure. And then there's a change of leadership at the top. Tell us about that.
Yeah, an opportunity arises for the Minister of Defence to shake up the leadership of the investigation, because the Provost Marshal, who's the head of the Royal Military Police, retires, and the lead detective, who they call Gold Commander, leaves also.
At the same time.
At the same time, yeah. And so in the summer of 2016, Brigadier David Neill becomes the Provost Marshal and John Harvey takes over as Gold Commander.
Do we know about them? How do they change the investigation?
Neill's appointment was controversial at the time because he, a couple of weeks before he was appointed, he had to fend off accusations from a fellow Royal Military Police officer that he had attempted to improperly close down an unlawful killing allegation against a British soldier.
Ah.
He was also, and you can see this from documents, that the MOD had noted that he might have a potential kind of conflict of interest because he was a friend of the SAS officer who commanded the squadron at the centre of the investigation.
If you think that sounds like a conflict of interest, you'd be right. Coming up, how the cover-up went from bad to much, much worse.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
So questions are already being raised about whether he's a suitable person to be taking over at a time of this critical Operation Northmoor, the first time they're really looking into big cultural problems in terms of the number of Afghans being killed. What happens to the investigation at this point? You know, we know in the past when it was a small investigation, they were facing lots of problems in gathering evidence. People kept stopping them from accessing weapons. They were told there was no video evidence. What's the situation like now?
One of the key challenges for the new leadership was to persuade the Special Forces to finally hand over a copy of its computer server, which, you know, might contain their mission reports, etc. And the Special Forces have been arguing for 10 months that the server contained top secret information and that the process of making a copy might disrupt their operations. The special forces did eventually relent and said that they could take a copy of it. But when they turned up, they found that a lot of the data had been deleted permanently.
Wiped. This is evidence.
They were particularly interested in finding the data that had been deleted from the server. And normally when data is deleted, you can then recover it with specialist forensic teams. But what they found is that very shortly before they were supposed to be handed over the database, the SAS's contractors had permanently expunged it so that it could never be recovered. And then the RMP senior investigator noted in his log, deletion process has been conducted in such a way that it is irreversible and impossible to determine what has been deleted. This is in direct disobedience to our demands to preserve the data in its entirety, and Special Forces Headquarters' assurances that they would do so.
They have completely ignored the legal process around this. They've been told to preserve this evidence. They've destroyed it.
And then, in addition, the SAS then completely reneged on their agreement to provide access to the rest of the data on the server that hadn't been deleted. And when the Royal Military Police's senior investigator urged the new Gold Commander to use the force's powers, the new Gold Commander declined the request. And in the end, the server was never obtained by the military police, and it's still not been obtained to this day.
I mean, this is mad. It does start to sound like they're being obstructed at every turn. Are they at least able to talk to all of the SAS men who were on the ground at the time, back in 2011, when this is happening?
They did talk to some of the men who were on the ground at the time as witnesses, but what happened was that under the new leadership, there was a change in the way that the investigation was advised and structured. So the Royal Military Police had been advised by the National Crime Agency and Manchester Police because they had greater experience in homicide investigations. They were replaced, and the MOD put in a new advisory group, which consisted of a former chief constable, two ex-police detectives, and a criminal barrister to review the investigation, which they did in January 2017. And if you imagine that now, something like 50 murders being investigated, which is a huge amount of material. And the ex-detectives were only given 8 days to review it. And they admit, and when they do their final report, they hadn't got time to go through all the evidence that was available. How would they? Just two of them in 8 days. But nonetheless, they come up with recommendations. And one of the recommendations is that they should interview the soldiers who were around during the killings in 2011, but they should only interview those that were still serving at the time, because they feared that anyone who'd left the army in the intervening years might leak to the press.
That mattered more than getting justice.
Exactly. So it meant that there were lots of people they didn't interview. And the other recommendation was that, if you'd remember, we mentioned earlier that there were two suspects that they had identified and they wanted to go and arrest them. And they recommended that they shouldn't be regarded as suspects and they shouldn't be arrested. These two people had left the army, so therefore they fell into the category of those that shouldn't be interviewed.
Can't even be questioned.
Can't even be questioned. And quite extraordinary that they would never be interviewed.
I sort of feel like we have to take a moment here, because this is astonishing. You finally get a Royal Military Police inquiry which is making progress. It's being advised by two of the police forces in this country that are most adept at doing murder investigations. All of that expertise is suddenly taken away, replaced by two former police detectives who, for some reason, even though this inquiry has gone on for months, are given just 8 days to reach their conclusions. And they decide that the two suspects who should be arrested now shouldn't. They shouldn't even be questioned about what happened.
And when you think about one of those was the SAS soldier who had made the confession to the SBS officer, the account of was being hidden in the safe. I mean, it's hard to understand
You have a statement with a confession.
Yeah, he must be the most crucial person you would ever want to talk to as an investigation. When the RMP did interview the serving members of the SAS and their support staff, they all had no recollection of the incidents.
Oh, how surprising.
A judge would later question this, as he put it, collective amnesia.
I mean, this is astonishing. And I haven't spoken to anybody who works for the Royal Military Police, but I imagine for them it must have been extraordinarily frustrating having gathered all of this evidence. So it must have been a bit of a relief when your piece, your first piece on this, comes out in 2017 and forces this to the top of the news agenda, makes people take notice. What was the reaction of the government when you published your story?
So the day that we published our story, we can now see from the documents that have been disclosed that Peter Ryan, who is the Director of Judicial Engagement at the Ministry of Defence, wrote to Stephen Lovegrove, the Ministry of Defence's permanent secretary, assuring him that the investigation had already been brought under control. He wrote, "Focus is now on one incident with the several others on the back burner. RMP now have no suspects. Prospects for successful prosecutions look slim. In turn, that conditions the investigative strategy and expectations about when this may be wrapped up." Did bad things happen? Quite possibly.
Meanwhile, for the investigators, they've been denied access to the computer system in which vital information could be found, and they were stopped from arresting their key suspects. The Ministry of Defence would later write, this is Stephen Lovegrave, the MOD's permanent secretary, he'd write that Operation Northmoor's plan to seize the server and identify suspects, quotes, "would have been extremely damaging to the morale and reputation of the armed forces."
Rather than holding anyone accountable for potential war crimes.
That's right.
You get a sense that as far as government and the upper echelons of the military are concerned, this is being tidied away. How does Operation Northmoor actually end?
In July 2019, David Neil closed down the investigation. No charges had been brought against any SAS soldier. And he promptly left the Royal Military Police 3 days later, his work done.
That's astonishing. Despite all the evidence, nobody has been held to account. What's happened to some of these characters since? Do we know what's happened to N1466, the man who took a huge risk to his own personal safety by reporting what was happening, by blowing the whistle?
We don't really know what has happened to N1466 because his identity is secret.
When Northmoor was shut down, he will have felt that the risk he took had been for nothing. That is also why this inquiry is so important, because it shows that hopefully that if you do blow the whistle as an army officer, something may come of it rather than it all just being suppressed and the culprits being allowed to get away with it.
We know that General Jacko Page, who was the head of Special Forces Directorate at the time of the 2011 incidents, went on to become the commander of Force Development and Training. David Neil, who had been head of the RMP at the time of the Northmoor investigation, went on to become the Chief Inspector of Borders and Immigration. Gwyn Jenkins, the SBS commander who alerted General Page to the allegations of extrajudicial killings, is now our National Security Advisor.
And we should say, we talked more about his role in all of this in yesterday's episode. He did raise the alarm, but then also left the evidence in a safe for more than 3 years until the Royal Military Police came for it. He wasn't the one offering it up. When he was appointed as the new National Security Advisor, there was clearly briefing coming from government because, as the Times reported, it's understood he would not have been appointed if ministers were worried about the conclusions of this inquiry in terms of his conduct. Does that feel to you like they're kind of prejudging where this new official inquiry is going to end?
It certainly does. The key question he needs to answer is why he didn't report it to the Royal Military Police at the time. And until he's provided that explanation to the inquiry, it's hard to see how anyone can judge how he will come out of it. I suspect that Justice Haddon Cave, who's the chair of the inquiry, may look dimly upon that statement from the government.
The reason we now have this inquiry is probably down to the fact that your journalism brought this to light, and it hasn't gone away for the government in the way that clearly people at the time hoped it would. You know, there was a sense that it was being wrapped up, it was being dealt with. What are you hoping this inquiry will achieve?
Well, I think like everything else, the fresh air of transparency is very good for these things. I mean, obviously, these are crimes, and we're dealing with a very secretive organisation in Special Forces, and I think there have to be questions about whether it is desirable to have a unit of the army that is so secretive and unaccountable. And I guess the inquiry will look at that. It's possible also that a murder inquiry will be reopened, and it's possible that, no matter that it's quite a few years on, that British soldiers might be held to account. And so actually I think that kind of the very future of the SAS is at stake on this. Mm. And ultimately also, it's a more simple thing. There are people in Afghanistan who've lost, you know, relatives, children, and they want justice. And getting all these things out into the open will give them justice, hopefully.
I have to say, reading your piece, it was just jaw-dropping. The number of times you realise that the system that you would hope would be doing something about this, would be holding people accountable, just seemed to close ranks. It's disturbing, really. You just don't expect that to happen in this country. For both of you, you've now been pursuing this for 8 years. What's kept you going?
It was difficult in 2016, 2017, when we first started looking at it, because we just started with this single source in Whitehall. He didn't have a huge amount of detail, but just expressing that there was a big concern in government about this, and that's all we had to go off. And obviously our editors were concerned at the time that, you know, this was a blind alley, and it would be very hard for us ever to prove it, even if it was true, and we couldn't be sure it was true. And getting it in the paper in 2017 was extremely difficult. It was also at a time when there were a lot of campaigning in the media to stop vexatious claims against our soldiers. There had been vexatious claims in relation to Iraq. And so we were completely kind of cutting against the thrust of popular opinion, it felt at the time. And the MOD were kind of denying it all. So for now, for this inquiry to have finally happened and for those documents to be disclosed and for us now to see that it was actually a lot worse than we even imagined is, you know, it's disturbing, but we do feel vindicated and proud that our work, you know, has brought this to light.
That was George Arbuthnot and Jonathan Calvert from the Sunday Times Insight team. They contacted the soldiers and civil servants mentioned in this podcast, but most declined to comment. General Sir Mark Carleton Smith told us that none of his senior commanders had expressed any concerns or produced any evidence of unlawful killings whilst he was Director of Special Forces. The MOD told us that it wouldn't be appropriate to comment on allegations which may be in the scope of the public inquiry. For more on this scandal, do read the coverage in the Sunday Times online at thetimes.co.uk. The producer today was Edward Drummond. The executive producer was Fiona Leach, and sound design and theme composition were by Mal Lasseto. If you can, please do share this podcast with your friends, family, colleagues, anyone who you think should hear it. Leave us a review, share it on social media, get the message out. This scandal has been covered up for far too long already, and it's not over yet. If you want to get in touch with us, or if you have any information on this, do drop us a line to thestory@thetimes.co.uk.
Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.